one of the recent winners of one of the shows on television that features a number of people, the stars and so forth, had a very interesting past. He told his story about being adopted and how excited he was when his family finally went through the process of completing the adoption, and how it made him feel so good about being a part of a family that he didn't have before. Janet was also watching a special with Josh Groban, singer. One of the things that they were doing on this program was highlighting foster children and promoting the idea of adoption. And she was noting how many times the children, when they would realize that they were no longer just foster children, but actually being adopted and being included in a family, made them just flourish, made them feel so loved, and made them feel like they were a part, finally, of something that was supposed to be natural, but for them had been denied. And how grateful they were when they realized somebody loved them. Maybe not their natural-born parents, but somebody adopted them and made them a part of their family. We have attained the same status in the eyes of God. Paul is making that very point here in the book of Galatians. We have become adopted children who are loved and are heirs and who have an inheritance. Not only are we loved, but we have an inheritance from God. And that's really what we need to think about today, our adoption, our inclusion into a family, and what that means for us to have been included in something that is perfectly natural, something created by God that would make us flourish in our lives. In Galatians chapter 4, Paul makes a big point of describing that process, of talking about how much that means. And he begins that process actually by reminding us of what we have just been thinking about over the last couple weeks, and that is the incarnation of Christ. In Galatians chapter 4 and verse 4, the Apostle Paul says, "But when the fullness of time had come, God sent his son, born of a woman." That's the way all people are born. But the fact is, he's trying to make it very clear that there's an identification that has occurred because God was born to be among us. Really, the story of Christmas is the story of Christ's humanity, of his becoming a human being. Hebrews chapter 2, if you go back and you read Hebrews chapter 2, you would find that Hebrews chapter 2 provides some deeper insights into why Jesus became a human. The writer there will tell us that he suffered like we did, and that was an important and significant element of his experience, and that he endured the same kind of things that we did. We're also told by the Hebrew writer that he has destroyed the power of death, which is the one thing, the writer says, makes us fearful. We have been fearful all of our lives about dying. Humanity has to face that. But with Jesus, you see, Jesus came and he conquered that. We don't have to be afraid of it any longer. It still makes us a little nervous, but the fact is, there's something on the other side now that we know Jesus has been here. And the writer also makes the point there that his becoming a human being makes him better able to understand and help us in our human weaknesses. He identified with us that he was fully human as well as fully God constitutes one of the most profound mysteries of our faith. But it also is what makes the incarnation so appealing. Paul doesn't usually make a whole lot about Christ's humanity. He's usually talking about Christ's divinity. But here, you see, he talks about Christ's humanity because he wants to remind us we've been adopted. He came that we might become a part of his family. And Paul says he came at just the right time. God's timing is, to us, not always on time. From God's perspective, his timing is impeccable. We know this, and his timing is not the same as ours. But Paul says here that this particular event occurred when the fullness of time had come. Think about that. God planned for this to happen when it did. And if we want to carry the adoption metaphor a little bit further along, think of it this way. God has filed all the paperwork, paid the necessary fees, which apparently in adoption procedures are quite extensive, and he's received official approval from the adoption agency to make the adoption final. God's timing, God did all that. God went through a tremendous amount of preparation to make that happen. He sent the prophets, he sent Moses, he established all these things so that for one thing could happen, and that is that we could be adopted as children. And if you're not sure about that, go back and read the first two chapters of Matthew and see how many times, how much trouble God went through just within the first couple of years of Christ's life to protect Jesus. You know, we tend to look at, a lot of the things that happened in the Gospel of Luke to get a lot of the narrative about the birth and so forth and the angels in heaven. But in the first two chapters of Matthew, an angel appears to Joseph four different times during those first couple of years. And it's all about moving Jesus from place to place to protect him, number one, from Herod and from other people who had come after Herod. And so God was making a tremendous amount of effort to make this adoption happen. God had planned it, and God's timing here is always spot on. It's always right, and the time to redeem and adopt humanity has come now with the birth of his son. It's all about the adoption from the Apostle Paul, at least here. And so we think today about being adopted children. We use the word sons, we mean everybody. Children is the word. Adoption, we are adopted as children and as heirs. Now, Paul will go on to talk about it here in kind of slightly different terminology in some ways, because he will talk about he has adopted you, but he's brought you out from underneath the slavery of the law. That's a lot of what he's doing in the book of Galatians. He's talking about the law and the slavery that occurs as a result of the law, but he also will talk about having redeemed all of us from the slavery of idols. In verses 8 and 9, he makes that point here. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that are by nature not gods. Perhaps he has in thinking here the Gentiles in particular. And as always, Paul is trying to bring together Jew and Gentile alike. Even though they've kind of been two separate cultures for quite a long time, he's bringing them all together here. He's bringing them into one family. He's adopting everybody. Those who were under the law and slaves as a result of it. Those who were slaves to idolatry and all the things that are really not gods at all. He has brought us into this family that we might be free. Freedom is the issue, or one of the issues that he brings up here. Freedom to those who were born under the law. Freedom to those who have still been enslaved by idols, and it is a very significant change in status. Now, Paul even moves us beyond that. He moves us beyond freedom to the whole issue of being not just a free man versus a slave, but even more, to be a son. Think about that. The difference between perhaps maybe it's a little hard for us to kind of grasp the concept of slavery or, you know, the status of a servant. Maybe you've seen places that have servants. I've never lived in such a household. I'm okay with that. But the fact is, he's moved us from being not just free, but being children of his, but being from serving at the table to sitting at the table as a part of the family. That's the movement that Paul is describing here. And he has this rather interesting statement that he makes. He says, because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. It's very interesting to me that he says the Spirit is the one who cries that within your hearts. There's something perhaps intuitive as a result of the Spirit of God being a part of who we are now that has cried out in our hearts and has affirmed to us that we are his children, that we can call him Father. Paul doesn't stop there either. He moves us not from being slaves to being free, from being free to being sons. And he adds a dimension to that. Not only are you sons, but you've got the inheritance of a son. It's more than being just a son. It's having an inheritance that he gives to us. Heirs receive an inheritance, do they not? They are favored over hired hands and slaves. They are the ones who are going to receive the father's blessing and his goods and his whatever he has. The sons, the children, are the ones that get those things. You know, it's got to keep our balance here, I think, in some ways, because we remember perhaps in Luke chapter 12 that one time Jesus was accosted by someone, and he said, "Teacher, I want you to help make my brother divide the inheritance with me." And we get in fights over inheritance, don't we? It's money. We want what is ours by right, or what we think is ours by right. And we, you know, people get in arguments all the time about inheritance and about the money that's supposed to come to us. Legally, perhaps we have a case to make in some cases, but the fact is, we are given an inheritance here. We don't need to fight over it, because I suspect there's going to be plenty for all of us. You know, God doesn't have a limited amount of inheritance here. God has everything that we need to be able to participate in his blessing in the next life. And we'll get whatever God deems us worthy to get. We don't have to worry about what somebody else gets. We're going to get what is coming to us. That's a promise. That is a promise that God has given us as adopted children. We don't have to quarrel over it. In the book of Ephesians, Paul makes some similar statements about it. In Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul refers to our inheritance in the following way. "For this reason, because I have heard of your faith in the Lord Jesus and your love toward all the saints, I do not cease to give thanks to you for remembering you in my prayers, that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give you a spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of him, having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you, what are the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints." Most of us want to have money at some point. I don't know whether you've had the ambition to have a lot of money or not. And it really doesn't matter. And I don't know that it's your ambition now to have a lot of money. And maybe you're not worried about having a lot of money in this life, hopefully because whatever inheritance you're going to get in the next life is going to be better than what you got here. Paul is praying that the Ephesians will understand that and have a depth of understanding the inheritance that they have got that's coming to them. And back in chapter 1 of verse 14, he also mentions the Spirit, who is the guarantee of our inheritance until we acquire possession of it. See, Paul puts a lot of stock in the Spirit working in our lives, doesn't he? Tells us that he's our guarantee. He's already told us that the Spirit sort of interjects into us this notion of Abba, Father, that God is our Father, that we have this relationship with him that's unique. And that's really what I want you to think about today. What does all this mean to you? You know, it's not just a lot of theological facts here that I'm trying to throw out at you, but I want you to think about the impact of what that adoption means for you. Number one is your relationship to God now is not just a legal one. It's a filial one. Filial meaning family. It is a family relationship that you have with God. It's not based on how well you perform. It's not based on these legal guardianship under the law or just how perfect you are. Hopefully it's what your parents have done with you. They accept you even if you're not perfect and try to move you along a little bit further to maturity. But you see, breaking the chains of that law and breaking the chains that idols have over our hearts is what gives us freedom and what moves us into a different relationship. We have a relationship as a child of God's. I think also that relationship and what it means for you is a certain amount of assurance and confidence of God's love. I don't know what your experience of your parents was, whether or not your parents assured you of their love and, you know, just loved you all the time. But I have to go back to thinking about what some of those foster children thought about now being loved and being a member of a family, that maybe we just shouldn't be thinking that we should take that for granted. It's really something rather unique. And we can be confident of that because that's what Paul is telling us here. You've been adopted. You're children. You're heirs. You have an inheritance. You have privileges. Now, don't take them for granted and don't, you know, hold them over other people's heads. But the fact is, you can be confident of that kind of thing. More than that, you have now an endearing relationship with God. I don't know if that's difficult for you to grasp. Growing up Catholic, sometimes God was always distant for me, you know. And I think if you go back and you think about what happened at Sinai, even at Mount Sinai with the Israelites, God was off on this mountain, and the mountain was smoking. It was like a volcano, and nobody was allowed to come close. Nobody wanted to come close to God because God was so powerful and distant and strong and holy. Unapproachable even, awe-inspiring, fearful. But you see, because Jesus was born of a woman, was born as a human being, now we gain a whole new perspective on God and who God is. God came and ate with us. God came and walked in our streets. God came and suffered with us. At the Last Supper, as the Gospel of John describes it, Jesus changes his discussion to the disciples and he says, "You're no longer just my disciples, you're my friends." And we can even take that a little bit further beyond that. We're not just friends, we are now sons and daughters of God. A whole new level of relationship, an endearing level, a closeness in a relationship. And finally, I think we need to be confident of the inheritance that he has offered to us. How can I even describe what the inheritance is? I don't think I have the words. I don't think I have the concepts. I don't think I can really describe what we have. Can you quantify God's inheritance? I can't. We can think of it in terms of money that we have here, things that we have, the beauty of nature, what God has given to us just freely from what he's created. But it's really hard to describe and quantify. You know, I guess the closest in my own imagination I can come to what heaven will look like will be perhaps whatever of the grandest scene of nature you can think of, and then multiply it numerous times over, you know, and realize it's never going to end. And what is he going to give you? Are you going to have one room? Are you going to have a mansion? I don't really know, other than perhaps your imagination can just run a little wild on that and think about what inheritance you have. And I guess the best exhortation I can give you is don't waste it for the sake of worldly pleasures, which are fleeting. I mean, even Jesus himself says, you know, store up treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy. If you're like us during this time of year, we tend to get rid of clothing because you've got new clothes or a few new things. You get rid of stuff. It's all worn out. It's just gone the way of what happens on earth. You're going to have an inheritance that will not fade or be destroyed. Do you want that? I think you do. That's why you're here, because you want to remember that and think about the treasures that you have in heaven. You're children of God. Take your status as a child of God seriously. Think about it. Realize just what it means. It is, in fact, an honor with all the privileges that a father can bestow on his children. Perhaps the best privilege of all is that he will always love you. And you have his promises on that. You have his promises that he will love you. You have his promises that there is an inheritance waiting for you if you remain faithful as a son in his house. come today for the adoption. Believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. It's a simple procedure. It's kind of God's adoption papers, I suppose. And all who do such are descendants of Abraham and thus heirs according to the promise. Won't you consider that today? And take your adoption seriously as we stand and sing our song of encouragement.